Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Listeners, hello and welcome to Homo Sapiens. We have got a brilliant episode for you this week. We are talking to Tom Allen. Tom is a really funny comedian who you probably know from doing his stand-up. He's on lots of panel shows. But he hosts Bake Off Extra Slice as well. He's written a book, and it's a memoir really about him growing up as a queer kid in Bromley. He is so funny, and what is brilliant about him is that he tells really funny stories, but within them are contained a sort of brilliantly observed gut punch that speaks to the very central existence of what it is to be an LGBTQ plus person. As far as I'm concerned, when I read it, that's what I really connected with. I'm so excited to speak to him. He's really good fun. He's really radically honest, and that's one of the things that I love about him. So I'm so excited to chat to him. We want to hear what you think about this chat, which will be coming up with Tom. So always please get in touch. Hello at Homo Sapiens Podcast or at Homo Sapiens on Instagram. If you want a t-shirt, review us on Apple Podcasts or go to everpress.com/Homo Sapiens where you can buy a t-shirt or you can buy a sweatshirt. The perfect gift for any friend of yours, any pet, anything really. I think it's time that we have a listen to Tom now.
For listeners at home might not realize, Chris has a podcast microphone yes. that you hold as though you are in the middle of a concert where you're singing your greatest hits. And it's very endearing.
And the way I sort of threw up the cable like that.
Playing with the cable is one of my favorite things. The way people, flip up the cable, just move it around. Like Dusty Springfield would have done.
Everyone wants to be more Dusty, no?
Well, except skirting boards. I mean, am I right?
Always on, you see?
Always on.
I love it. Okay, so what I want to say first is congratulations on the book, because it is absolutely hysterical.
Oh.
While being full of searingly brilliant observations that require someone to properly reflect on who and what they are. And that is writing, and it's beautiful, and it's really hard to do that.
Oh, that is such a lovely thing to say. Thank you. I really enjoyed writing it. It felt quite cathartic to put a lot of sort of incidents and things I remember from my teenage years, or I had kept a diary. So a lot of the time it was excerpts from that, but putting it on the page for the book meant that it condensed it all and was a good process for me. Of course, when you write something, you go, well, I'm writing this on my own. This feels very personal. Then you forget that at the end, people are going to go and read it. You go, well, I hope, what have I said? Have I said too much? But I've been very flattered that people seem to actually relate to what I've been saying. So I feel very flattered that you say that.
So there's kind of two versions of this book that could have been written. Uh-huh. And one would be the stuff about shame. And that would be a really important and engaging book. But it wouldn't translate in the way that you've done because it's too heavy. Whereas actually what you managed to do is tell a fucking hysterical story about going to see an old lady for tea. But really what you're talking about is five different things to do with being an outsider and the queer experience and all of those things in a way that we can all relate to.
For me, what was important was to not do a very linear narrative at times. Like I didn't want to write when we get stories told about our experience, I think they're often quite simplistic, as in somebody struggles with their sexuality, they experience a bit of homophobia, and then they triumph over it by beating that person up back and proving themselves wrong, or they do something flamboyant to to counter it, or they finally come out and then they turns out the person they fancied all this time fancies them back and they have a wonderful relationship. And I've always felt like, well, it's never been as simple as that to me, and it's always been much more complex and much more meandering and circuitous to get to any destination. In that, you know, I think human beings, we do peculiar things, we do the unusual things. Like, I was bullied at school and beaten up, and my response was to do a Julie Walters monologue, which wasn't triumphant at all. Like, from Alan Bennett's Talking Heads. It wasn't triumphant. It was, people were like, what? And when I was writing it down, the editor was like, but I think we need something that's like, and then I realized this, and I was like, no, because it doesn't go like that. And similarly with coming out, I didn't want it to seem like, and then I came out and everything was fine, because actually I think I thought it would be disloyal to a lot of people, because I think it's a journey to about self-acceptance and getting to a place where you feel happy with yourself. And then maybe you have a relationship if you want one, but it's often deemed as like, and then you get in a relationship as soon as you come out and everything's fine. And I sort of wanted to go, no, it's not always as simple as that.
No, the whole thing's a mess. It's a, believe me, from the front line.
Oh, I know, right.
but did you, your chapter, you know, your chapter headings are like speaking and, you know, dressing and swimming and eating maybe is one as well. And
yes.
And I thought what you were going for there, which I thought was so lovely, was it permeate, being different permeates everywhere.
Exactly that. Mm. And it was like, as a small child, I knew I was different. And it wasn't that I was like, oh, I'm gay at the age of four, in the sense that I wasn't like, and I fancy that other boy. It wasn't that. It was a sense of something, I suppose, more profound, that I just knew I was different to the world around me, seemingly. And that did, yeah, exactly as you say, permeate everything. Like, I had this posh voice, which, my parents aren't posh. They're Londoners. My dad's a coach driver. My mum worked in the Army and Navy, which is a department store, not part of the military. And so people would be like, why'd you talk like that, though? Why'd you speak like that? My school was a comprehensive school. They'd be like, why'd you talk like that, though? I don't understand. Are you posh, though? Are you posh? And I'm like, no, I'm not posh. I have to speak like this. And I'm like, well, are you gay then? Are you gay? And I'm like, no, because I'd have to deny it, because there was no way I could come out at that time. Like, no, I'm not. No. But I just, really, as an adult looking back, I was like, why am I always so tired? When people ask me that, my heart would always sink. And it'd be like, because it's this thing of other people going, but why? I need an explanation from you on why you're like this. Like, I don't know why I'm like this. I don't know why I've got eyebrows. I don't know. I'm just born like it. And just, why do I have to explain myself to you? And we spend so much time explaining ourselves to other people. And actually, sometimes you just go, oh, shove off, as I'll assume this is a very polite daytime podcast.
I mean, or we'll give it a go.
For the grown-ups out there, you want to go fuck yourself. Why do I have to explain myself to you? I'm just who I am. Maybe I talk like this today. Maybe I talk with a Russian accent tomorrow, but it's my choice. It's up to me, isn't it?
Almost like difference radars spotting. Different.
I agree, Chris. I agree. It's sort of like, yeah. And I think it's a way of like controlling people as well, of going like, but why? I need to know for me. And it's like, they put it across in such a way as though they're doing some investigative journalism, but they're not. They're just being assholes. And I never walk up to somebody and go, why are you wearing that jumper? I like it.
I don't know. It's policing. It's self-policing, isn't it? And it's really boring. And so 50% of your tiredness comes from being policed. The other 50 comes from the anticipation of being policed, you know, and like, what's going to happen next.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Mm. And I think the reason I called the book No Shame is because whilst there's been huge strides in representation and in legislation, huge changes, which have been very positive, but it doesn't mean that just flicks a switch, because I'm 37. So I grew up under Thatcher, Section 28, and at a time when, you know, there wasn't equality legislation, there wasn't equal age of consent.
You couldn't teach it in school.
And you couldn't, like, a teacher couldn't say to me, if I came out, they couldn't go, you know what, you're going to be fine. That's absolutely fine. Mm. You're a valid, important person. They'd have to be like, well, I don't know what they'd have to say, to be honest. But if they would be terrified of losing their job, frankly.
Because you had a lovely teacher who said, I'm not allowed to tell you this, didn't they?
Yeah.
Did they say, I'm not allowed to tell you this, had a wonderful, there are gay people.
Yeah, a wonderful teacher who told us that Section 28 existed. Because as a child, you don't know what the legalese of your school is. So
no. Like, there was, in my staff room at school, there was a bet, like a wager on whether I was gay or not.
Oh.
And it's just like, that's so unkind to a child.
Yeah,
you know,
to a
like,
child.
Go and ask them if they're all right. Don't.
Yeah. And I always hate that thing of like, well, we always knew you were gay. We knew you were gay before you did. And all that. And I'm like, it just sort of makes the experience of coming out, I think, is so fraught with emotions that are so difficult to explain. It's like the idea of straight people like using it as a means of sort of humiliation, again, I just think is really unkind. But I've gone on a right high horse here, haven't I? And I come on your nice, light-hearted podcast as a comedian. I'm like, and another thing I'm angry about. Should have just phoned up LBC, shouldn't I?
Indignant of Bromley.
Indignant, very indignant. I've got this bottle of champagne I'm going to open in a moment to loosen up. Then I'll get, then I've got some opinions.
We need to open it. Come on, let's open it.
Should we do it now?
I'm on my, yeah, let's do it. Celebration.
I'm going to try and do it while I'm holding my microphone. Well, thank you. This is my last thing of my release day. I'm released, not from prison, but from for the board.
Go on, let's pretend you're in prison.
Oh, let's.
Can I describe the room you're in?
Yes, if you like.
Tom Allen, beautifully spoken man who, in his wonderful book, talks about...
While you're doing that, I'm going to open my bottle.
Okay, liking glamorous things that perhaps it was unexpected for him as a child to like. I dial into this Zoom and he is in a Georgian panelled room in a full suit and tie, and it is nothing short of everything I could ever have hoped for.
Look, I'm on brand, okay? I'm always on brand.
It's amazing. And as I was so underdressed.
Yes, and you should. But my dad said to me, clothing is not about how you look, it's about how you feel. And I thought that's good advice. And so I like that. I like to sometimes wear a suit because it makes me feel nice and I feel all proper then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So now he's got a bottle of champagne that he's going to open because this is the sort of life that Tom Allen leads.
I actually don't.
Oh, there we go. He's popped the cork.
There we go.
This is incredible.
Pop the cork and then I'm going to pour it.
Didn't stick a straw in it straight away. So that's a plus, listeners.
So... cheers.
Cheers.
This is the only drink I've had to celebrate the release of my book. And I'm very glad to be sharing it with you, Chris.
Oh, and vice versa. You mentioned something in the book about going on a cruise. And you went on a gay cruise, which I love and I want to talk about further. But yeah. You were talking about how gay men call each other she.
Oh, I mentioned that, yeah.
And I just want to talk to another gay person about that because I think it's a really, really hot topic because a lot of people listening will say that actually gay men calling each other she is quite misogynistic and it's, you know, but for me personally, the idea of calling other men she was a very specific safe haven of being allowed to show my femininity and theirs in a safe place because it was very... attacked when I did it in other spaces.
Yeah, I think I'm totally aware of how, you know, how people can be annoyed about it. And in the book, it's not actually me saying it, just so you know, listeners.
It totally is. He's lying.
No, it's not. It's some people I overhear.
No, he overhears. No, you were overhearing a group of gay people going onto a cruise and they're calling each other she. And I was like, oh, but why do you think people find it annoying?
Well, I think perhaps for what you just described, like that it's sort of seen as, why I don't know. Well, I wouldn't like to say, I suppose. I don't exactly. I wouldn't like to speak for somebody else. But I suppose it could be considered.
Oh, for God's sake, have a gulp of champagne.
For God's sake. But I would agree with you that it's kind of about playfulness. And for me, camp, I'm very interested in camp as a word and as a thing. I think it's about playing with the world around you and making it more bearable. And making it lighter and taking the constraints of heteronormativity in all their forms and playing with them and bending them and having fun with them in a way that makes it acceptable to be different. Because if it's playful, then people can go, oh, we're just having a laugh. You know, but actually, fundamentally, I think humor and lightness has been a hugely important part of a lot of our history, I think, in my opinion.
Yes.
And that's not to disregard that, like I say, of course, there are times when things have to move on and we must acknowledge other people's, if anybody would be hurt or, for example, hurt by it or upset by it. But I think that humour has been a very important tool for people who feel outsiders because it allows them to process the world and to present themselves to a world that finds them unacceptable and make themselves seem more acceptable.
I completely agree. And I think what mystifies me is the concept that these two things live side by side. One is camp is dismissed as frivolous, disposable, useless, but is dealt with as if it's horrendously threatening. It's like, if I'm so frivolous, why do you give a fuck, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, because it is threatening. I don't know what it's threatening to. Is it? I mean, I know this is like an age-old question, but I sometimes wonder, is it actually envy in that actually once you're on the outside and you're able to interpret the world in a playful, fun way, actually, if you're stuck on the inside, actually, you're going, well, that's not fair. I've got to do all this. I've got to put on this boring performance and they can just do what they like. Well, that's not fair.
I think I'm always trying to work out why the world is so fucking strange and why people have such an issue with trans rights, for example, or all these things. It's indeed, like, yes. I think it all comes back to safety. Right. And I think people want to feel safe. And I think there's something in camp that makes people feel unsafe. This is a theory, like who knows? But I think that it's about, you know, this very old and silly idea, but it once upon a time it was about survival, was that men do the heavy lifting, women do the caring. And camp is about men crossing those boundaries or women crossing those boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that upsets on a deep survival level the status quo and therefore must be squashed. That's my only assessment.
I guess that would add up, I suppose. But yes, and I suppose if you've got somebody who's going, I don't treat the world seriously, then that is threatening, isn't it? Or that is kind of like you say, frightening. If
it means food might not be on the table if you take it to the most disastrous end. And I think that's why even in COVID, the arts are not accounted for because they're considered
interesting.
You know?
Yeah, maybe. You know, maybe. But how camp is COVID?
What I also find interesting is why are we as queer people, not to generalize, but drawn to camp? So you said a wonderful thing.
Go on.
Said a wonderful thing, which I think is an extension of camp, which, go on.
Go on. What was it? I'm sure it was wonderful.
Well, you were talking about living with your parents and how they were going to get a new kitchen. Yeah. And they insisted on getting like some old one from B&Q and having that put in. Not old one, but you know, it was on sale.
X display.
And you were talking about how your dad would bring the Pyrex dish out of the oven straight to the table. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting it on, you were like, I've bought some serving crockery. What's all that about? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was incredibly funny because I could really relate, because I think there is something in queerness, and maybe it's gay maleness, I don't know, about what the question all the time for some reason is, where's the glamour?
Well, yes.
You know, why aren't we making this glamorous?
Well, I not to come back to my book all the time, but I thought about it when I was writing the book, that's why I say it, of, you know, like wanting to make everything exquisite and wanting to make everything perfect. And again, I think it's deemed as, I guess, as we're saying, flippant, frivolous, by a lot of mainstream society to kind of go, why are you spending all day preparing a plate of crudities when you could be you could be doing something practical? But I would say, well, the crudities are a very important part of the meal, because they're our first, you know, that's the one that we have that was sober. So, you know, things like that, and kind of, I remember at school and stuff, that kind of sense of like, don't show off, don't make a fuss, don't stick out.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And actually, again, it feels a bit like a protest to go, no, I want things to be lovely. Why can't they be lovely? And why isn't there time to make the dessert look exquisite for people and be kind to people and in that way and be generous to people and make a fuss of them and make a fuss of today and decorate everything. And I enjoy this sort of fun of playing with how competitive that can become. But at the same time, I think it's a very drab world, isn't it? That is totally without that exquisiteness. And I love that Royal Vauxhall Tavern shared a beautiful post as part of the commemorations of World AIDS Day. A lovely story from somebody who, growing up, they'd had gay men as lodgers in their mum's house, and how these gay men who'd called themselves their fairy godfathers had always known a little something about everything, and always delighted in making everything exquisite, and knew and had opinions and really cherished this young person's opinions, and made them develop their own opinions, and loved whatever they said, whether they agreed with them or not. And I just thought, yes, that's the beauty of all the, particularly the older generation of queer people, I think, many of whom were sadly lost as part of the AIDS pandemic, but I think who really knew about what those experiences, because they'd grown up during a time when you had to channel your energy into the arts or to learning about things and loving things, at a time when it was so difficult to be openly expressing your sexuality, and I love that cherishing of every detail and every, we must go to the opera. Do you know what I mean, Chris? The people, have you met people like that? When I was growing up, my dad had a family friend, Andy, and he was a dancer in the West End, and he's my dad's friend. He grew up on the same street as my dad, and he's somebody, the first person I met who was like, and what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And we're going to go here. And let's talk about Caravaggio. And let's talk about this wonderful aperitif I once had in Venice. And then when I went to Crete, I had this experience, and I'd never seen anybody like it, because, you know, so much of heteronormative society is about basically having omelettes. And what are you going to have for tea? And that's great too. And I love celebrating that. And I don't know. There's such a, people are so quick to slam any kind of like celebration of life. And you go, none of us are here for a long time. We're here for a good time. Why shouldn't we be allowed to live exuberantly? And the shame thing I write about is within that, of that, like, why have I got to be ashamed to just delight in some lovely wallpaper?
Well, I think that if you are very easily assimilated into the environment in which you are born, you don't have to look that far beyond the end of your nose to get everything you need.
Yes.
Whether that be sustenance or love or nutrition or, you know, like emotional stuff as well as physical stuff, I suppose. Whereas if you plop onto planet Earth and you start reading the room and working out how things work, and you're like, ooh, okay, I do not, not, yeah, okay, I'm different. I feel like it visually, I see it in my head, is like a torchlight isn't just 4 feet away from you, it's 100 feet away from you, because you have to go and look for all these things.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And that opens your eyes. And also you're hyper aware. I have this theory why queer people like nice lighting.
I put the big light on just so you can see.
Well, yes, but, you know, I was upset.
Only for that, I will be dimming again. I've got a dimmer switch. Don't worry, everybody.
Good. But I was thinking that queer people like nice lighting. I'm massively generalizing. But it's because you are actually really hyper aware of your surroundings, because you have felt at threat from a very young age.
Yes. Well, I hadn't thought of it like that. I like that. I dare say.
Very sensitive.
Very sensitive. That's why we're deemed often as sensitive to it.
Lily livered lefty is my friend's mother.
Lily livered. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that we're constantly searching for to see ourselves reflected, I suppose.
And it's harder to find.
It's harder to find. And I think even in adulthood, and I found in early adulthood, finding people to relate to on that level and finding people to connect with on a fancying level, because you spend so much, or I spent so much of my early life in my teenage years, say, fancying people who I knew would never fancy me back. And so that becomes a thing that you just sort of, you become used to that, which is, and it sounds so mawkish, doesn't it? And so kind of self-indulgent, but I think it is true. And because it's a numbers game. Straight people, for example, seem to be able to just walk into any pub anywhere and maybe chat somebody else and flirt with somebody else, or, you know, not all not all. But I, you know what I mean? It's a little bit more straightforward.
And you might, straightforward.
Straight. Do you know what I mean? Straightforward.
Got it.
Right? Always on the wordplay. Whereas, you know, we have to go a bit further afield. And, you know, like think of like going to a gay bar. You'd have to travel. You have to go there. If you didn't know any other gay people, you have to go on your own. You have to beg a straight friend to come with you and then they get bored and leave. I'm saying you, I mean me. And
No, I spent so much time in gay bars when I was growing up, pretending I was with people to people in the gay bar. I'd be like, oh, my friends are over there. But they weren't. They'd gone because they'd come for like a drink and be like, this is shit.
Where did you grow up, Chris?
In London. So in...
Wimbledon. Somewhere like Wimbledon.
You fucking guessed it.
Did I really?
Yeah.
I just guessed that.
I love that you guessed that.
I just know I can tell.
You can smell it. yeah, I grew up in Southfields next to Wimbledon.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, it was, you know, not many gay bars, put it that way, people.
Where would you have to go? Would you have to go into your London town?
Yeah, I'd go up to Soho. And that was great fun. Loved it, you know?
Yeah. I liked it, but I liked, do you know where I was my favourite? Was Popstars.
Popstars was great because it had an indie room and it just felt a bit...
something for everybody. It's like a gay youth club.
Yeah. What was your floor?
Indie floor on the top. That was the indie floor.
Really?
Yeah. Where would you go?
No, indie floor was ground floor, wasn't it? So Popstars, everybody, was a gay night at the Astoria on Tottenham Court Road in London.
No, it wasn't. It was at King's Cross.
Oh, yeah.
Did this one I went to. Maybe you're younger than me.
Three sheets to the wind by the time I'm older than you.
Are you? How old are you, Chris?
39.
Oh, only 2 years.
But yeah, it was nice. I liked that place because I suppose what was interesting about those clubs, and I wonder if people feel that you have better facilities for this now, whether that be online or in physical spaces, Popstars, that place, felt young. And actually often when you went to a gay club, when you were coming out, you know, when we were younger, for like our first forays, it actually felt quite old. Everyone was quite old. And then...
That's funny you say that. I actually had the opposite experience. Whenever I went somewhere, everybody looked really young. And I was like either losing my hair or... No, probably losing my hair around about that time. And always felt older anyway. So... I always kind of liked that there was a bit of a mixture of age groups there because everywhere I went, everybody seemed to be very twinky. And that was the only, seemed to be the most popular. That was the popular gang. And I never felt like I was part of that. But I think it depends what floor you went to.
Yes. Well, no, I'm thinking about when I had to go.
Are you being served that there were different floors? Like Grace Brothers.
Yes.
I was always in the haberdashery. But
I love that you take that reference. It's just, I love it. Now, Tom, can you define, because it's something you talk about a lot in your book, and it's something we talk about a lot on this podcast, but I think it's important to have a refresher.
Yes, sir.
Can you define shame for us? Because I think it is very, very universal experience. It is not a gay thing or a queer thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I define it as... being in the back of the car as a child and the football results being read out on the radio, and on BBC radio, they would always be in this rhythm, which was Blackburn Rovers 2, Ipswich Town 1. It was always kind of, I made up, like, I could never know any of the names of the teams, but like Vaudeville Volavants 18, Manchester United 0.
Now that is a real team. Everybody knows.
That is a real team. Both of those were real teams, and that was a real score. and they'd always go up at the top. And anyway, I would be in the back of the car feeling a bit sick, but also like probably like, and then, and wanting to tell some very high energy story about like, and then I really liked the way that when we went round to Sally and Roger's house, and Sally had lovely red nails, and I love Sally's nails, and my dad would be trying to listen to the football results, and we'd just go, shh. And he didn't know he was doing it, but you know, it's just that feeling of just, it happens in any context. With any child, especially a precocious one like myself, that sometimes you probably do need to tell them to shut up. But there was just that feeling of like, I'm going to say a thing, shh, don't. And it's the same as like, if you've ever been told, don't be silly. And when you, just in those moments when you're like really cutting loose and just feeling sort of full of yourself in a nice way. And somebody goes, no, stop it. And you go, oh, you're right. What was I thinking? And it's that sort of feeling. And I describe it as like a feeling of cold water being poured down your spine. And so I think everybody's probably experienced that, and in some capacity.
That can be these moments, like when you interrupt someone in the car, and you interrupt the football score in the car, and you feel like, you know, you feel stupid, really. But what can happen if you're different in any way, and that can be LGBTQ+, it can be many other different ways.
Yes, Chris.
That can be with you all the time.
Yeah.
And because you feel different and you don't know how to articulate it. And the repercussions of that are massive, aren't they?
Well, I think exactly that is that you don't know how to articulate it, or you're not allowed to articulate it. And so when you think, like, for a lot of straight people, they play kiss chase in the playground, or they have their first crushes and they're able to talk to their friends about it, or you know, and they kiss somebody they fancy, or they don't get to kiss them, but they get to talk about it. They kiss somebody else, and all those kind of, and people are like, oh, they've got their first partner, and their families know exactly how that feels because they had the same experience, and so there's that sort of reflection, that validation that comes from that. But I felt I wasn't able to talk about any of that because I felt so ashamed about it, and I was so terrified of what the repercussions would be, and I didn't know if they would be positive or not. You know, when so much of the media was like about people getting beaten up, or, you know, people being shamed in the media for just coming out. So I felt I couldn't come out. I couldn't even talk about it. I had to actively bury it and push it down. And I think when you're doing that, that does leave a scar in your psyche that is going, what you are is not okay. Push it away. And that energy is exhausting. And I think, so we, yes, you know, often go through those kind of trials of adolescence in our early, and well, any point in our adulthood, because we haven't had that time in our formative years. Yeah.
A lot of people are starting to talk about it, and it's quite an abstract concept, which, yeah, so, you know, like Lily Allen did her album No Shame, and she is someone who, very like you, is able to go and bullseye what the thing is.
It's a family
and she's
thing.
Been doing that.
It's a family
it's
thing.
Exactly.
I've never met her. I'm not related to her.
But she's brilliant at that, and always was with her music. Like, you know, she wrote that song The Fear however many years ago, which is all about FOMO, basically.
And
you know, curdling that is to the soul, I suppose.
Oh, what a lovely expression.
And you know, so, but people have started to talk about it more, and I think what's interesting is it's like, so if I tried to broach the concept of shame with some grown-ups, people who are a generation above us,
and you're broaching the subject with them, I think if you're bringing a brooch to the conversation already
but I feel that they would all roll their eyes and
really?
Be like, oh, for God's sake, in our days, we just got on with it.
I think that's just the tradition of generation to generation in any context, isn't it? Of going, well, in our day, we just got on with it. But of course, you know, I'm sure the generation before that were going, well, you don't know what it was like to grow up in a workhouse. I mean, it wasn't quite that's as close as that. But, you know, I think that but at the same time, well, I think what's wonderful is we seem to constantly evolve in how we talk about things and how open we can be about things, and I think it's only a good thing, isn't it, to find new ways of articulating the human experience. And I think we should see it as an invitation to compassion and to understanding one another, and that's only a good thing, because empathy breeds empathy, doesn't it? The more we understand ourselves, the more we understand the people around us, the more we understand the people who are not around us but who we know through other means, on the television or whatever, you know, like it's only a good thing.
Yeah. But I also think you make a really important point in the book, that is the exit door for that shame is not coming out, that it sticks around, and that's going to be ingrained in you forever, and you have to remember to navigate it.
Yeah, it's a journey, isn't it? I think that's been my experience anyway. And I know, you know, a lot of people have found it much easier than I have to find partners and sort of feel kind of much more settled and validated in that way. But I've not found that particularly easy. But then I do talk quite a lot. So maybe there were people trying to tell me they liked me, but I unfortunately talked over them. But,
I found that, which would probably be the reason I've ended up doing a podcast, is...
Yes, girls.
I had to observe growing up that, in hindsight, that I used talking as my medicine.
For sure.
So I would talk all the time in school because I actually felt weirdly wretched inside and I didn't know why.
Oh, yeah. And that feeling of feeling weirdly wretched, I really relate to. That I didn't feel... And people are like, what are you worried about? Why don't you like yourself? Why don't you like yourself? You see, you've done really well in your GCSEs. And I'm like, you don't understand. I don't know where it comes from, but I do not like myself. So if I keep busy with doing well in my GCSEs, then it means I can repress those thoughts that are going, you're a terrible person. You.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to articulate that as well. And people are like, but why? But why? And that's lovely because they're being nice. But and I don't mean to shun that support.
No, but I think it's about different strokes for different folks, you know. And like, so, you know, Alan Cumming, who I do this podcast with, who is so... Alan and I are made from a different cloth, which is why he is such an inspiring person to me. Because I was sort of, you know, Alan, I was sitting there and I was worried and I was thinking, and he's like, oh, for fuck's sake, get on with it. And you're like, forgot that was an option.
Well, that is good too. And I think I have a natural propensity for self-reflection. And sometimes that is important. And that has been useful, obviously, in writing a book, perhaps. But actually, sometimes role models who go, come on, we're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time. Let's do things. They're very important.
Listeners, that was part one of our chat with Tom Allen. God, he's funny, isn't he? He just manages to turn any kind of story into the funniest, funniest thing. Look out for part two, which will be coming up next in your feed. Have a listen to the continuation of our chat with Tom.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Powered by Spirit Studios.